I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. It's about interesting family stories and the truth behind them. It's available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Are thinking about selling your home? I have great news because right now, my buddy Josh Heisel over at Keller Williams, I just spoke with him today. Imagine if buyers didn't need to make a down payment to buy your home. You definitely get more offers and it put way more money in your pocket. Right now, if you're selling your house and you want as much power as possible at the negotiating table, you need to work with Josh Heisel. Josh and his team at Keller Williams Realty have a program that can help buyers get a free down payment for their homes. The way that it essentially works is, he explained it to me today, it's essentially like getting a second mortgage, but it's 36 months, 0% interest, and they're just going to waive it free. And that's how you're going to end up having the power to have no down payment. That means that you'll have more buyers available for your home, and it really can make the selling process so much easier. Think about how many people will be able to make an offer with that kind of assistance, and how much more your home will sell for. Josh is the only agent in Memphis with this program that helps buyers make the free down payments. That's why he is the best at what he does. Also, if you are someone that really wants time to be the biggest issue that you face, he can make you a guaranteed instant cash offer at your home. Full market price for your home. You won't get this, you know, you're not going to get the same amount of money if you take one of those instant cash offers that you see on the billboards, the text messages, all that. No, you're not going to get that, but you will get it from Josh. And he also offers no upfront costs, flexible fees. He'll even let you out of your contract anytime risk-free. So if you're thinking about selling your home and you want to take advantage of this new free down payment offer, call my buddy Josh Heisel at Keller Williams Realty, 901-461-8147. That's his cell phone. You can also visit the website, joshhasthebuyers.com. Let's take a break. When we get back, let's get into the list. Tim, I know, has thoughts on the latest additions to the LSU basketball staff. We also got to get his thoughts on the latest with Brendan Sorsby. We'll talk about all that. And we also got some mock drafts that we'll get into coming up later on during hour number two. Stick around. You're listening to Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Finn has just released a new mock draft. Also, our buddy DeMichael Cole has released his first mock draft. We'll talk about those during the next segment. Before we do any of that, let's get into the list. Will Wade. Former St. John's star RJ Lewis, the 2025 Big East Player of the Year, has committed to LSU, sources told ESPN, according to Jeff Borzello. After a terrific 24-25 campaign for the Red Storm, Lewis entered the transfer portal and entered the NBA draft. He remained in the draft process past the withdrawal deadline before going undrafted. Lewis then signed a two-way contract with the Utah Jazz before being traded to the Boston Celtics in early August in exchange for George Niang and two future second-round picks. He was waived by the Celtics before signing an Exhibit 10 contract with the Maine Celtics, Boston's G League affiliate. The Maine Celtics then waived Lewis, who was injured before he played a game. According to Borzello, the NCAA has previously ruled that players who sign NBA contracts are ineligible, with the organization recently prevailing in the eligibility saga of former Alabama center Charles Bediako. Okay, so a couple of things here. Number one, I guess where I have fallen in is I don't necessarily care that they signed him. I'm asking, why did they sign him? Because I guess you could make the argument like, well, there's no harm, no foul. Like, either he is eligible or he's not. I do think that there is the suspicion out there right now, or there's the assumption, I think, from the audience that, like, oh, LSU thinks he's going to play. Like, they don't know what his eligibility status is.
I just, and maybe it's because RJ Lewis was such a high profile college basketball player that I'm like, what are we doing here? I mean, I tweeted out the Taylor Twellman gif. I don't think he played in the G League. He was on rosters, got traded. I mean, the fact that this dude got traded.
For assets.
Oh, my God. Like, I'm all for the payment of players. But if you've decided, like, I'm even all for the adjustment. Like, if you were to go undrafted in the draft, maybe even play summer league. I don't care. But, like, at what point are we just, is enough enough with this stuff? And, like, to your point, I guess shooters got to shoot. If you're LSU, like, yeah, if we could get the Big East player of the year to come on down here, why not try it? Maybe we'll get some injunctions. Maybe they'll let him play for a little bit. He doesn't have eligibility, according to the NCAA, right? So this
Correct.
Is immediately going to be, like, there's no even, like, it's like, you know, going into this, there's going to be lawsuits immediately as he, if he ever steps foot on.
I mean, I would presume, like, those are already in the process of being filed.
And if I look, if I'm a RJ Lewis or any of these guys, like, why not? I'm going to make more money in college. Like, probably just shouldn't. Like, why did he leave in the first place, right? He still had a year of eligibility. Why does he go try to play pro and then it's like, oh, it's not working out. I'm going to go back to college. Like, I guess you just had bad advice from that standpoint.
Do we know what his timeline is?
So he played at UMass.
Because I thought he was old even last year.
So he's only played 3 years of college basketball.
Okay. So I guess he is still timeline wise, but, like, I don't know. Like, I don't have a, I do not think that this is anti-player to hold the belief that if you declare for the draft, your college days are done.
I always didn't like, a while back when, like, a high school kid would clearly get bad advice, he'd declare for the draft, wouldn't get drafted, and they're like, well, sorry, kiddo, can't go to the pros. Like, to me, that was a mistake. And now you're able to have an agent beforehand, so you would think you're getting, in theory, better advice, right? Back then, you could be advised or so, or as soon as you signed with an agent, you were deemed ineligible.
Right.
Isn't that the deal?
Yep.
So now it's different, right? Now you could sign with an agent. They can give you proper.
You can get all the advice. NFL certified, or I'm sorry, the NBA certified information from the draft. Like, you.
RJ Lewis made the decision after his junior year at St. John's when he was Big East Player of the Year, I'm going to play pro. And he spent a year, and I don't know, I was not following his situation, but he clearly spent a year thinking he was going to be a pro player. And now we're like, yeah, let's just go back to college.
And I guess, like, of course, everyone will make their Will Wade jokes. It's like, well, if anyone's going to try it, it's him. I also kind of view this as a, man, this is a really desperate move. Like, if you look back to, I think it was probably 2 weeks ago, maybe now it's three, but they essentially had one player on their roster. And they were striking out on everyone that they were recruiting, everyone that I think that they thought they were probably going to get. And then you've seen him go heavily overseas trying to get pro players. And I don't know, like, to me, like, this just reeks of desperation more than it does, like, of, well, this is going to be for the best of the kid. It's like, no, he doesn't have any other options. Did you see Goodman's tweet?
No.
According to Jeff Goodman, one top 20 head coach told the Field of 68 about Will Wade, "You're being an idiot a-hole for the sake of being an idiot a-hole. What you're doing is effing it up for everyone else."
And look, there are plenty of blurred lines right now, as we all know. Like, dudes who have played professionally in Europe are coming to the States because they're getting more money, right? Like, it's really kind of interesting. But those, a lot of those leagues in Europe, like, I don't know this for sure, but it's not like they're coming from, like, the league that Luka played in.
No,
it's... Like, Luka played in that
there's
the,
also
the
this
top league, right?
There's also... Yes, no, he played in the, whatever, the FIBA. Like, or not FIBA. Whatever, he played in the Spanish
league. Was it
Eurobasket? I think he played for Real Madrid, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was, so they're, yeah, not, in they're the best, highest...
It's like the second best league in the world, right?
Correct. So over there, where the lines get blurred are... whether or not you're an academy player, whether or not you're a professional player, like all of those teams have academies and they start scouting players and put players in their academies like as young as like 12 or 13. And you, for every Luka, there's probably another 20 or 30 guys that you've never even heard of. But this is, to me, this is very different. Like, you had the option. You chose to stay in the draft. You did not draft, and you're now... Like, to me, this is exactly what we saw with Bediako. You're only coming back because you couldn't play professional basketball, which is what you tried to do. Like, can we at least bring back some consequences to decisions you make? You had the option to play. He had the option to play one more year of college basketball. He chose not to do it. Why are we saying that you don't have to live with the consequences? I mean, I guess in fairness to the NCAA, they're not. They've tried to come up with a rule that's basically saying if you sign a professional deal, if you sign an NBA contract, and an Exhibit 10 is an NBA contract, you are not eligible.
Why is this so complicated?
I think because you have desperate coaches that go, it's worth it.
And yeah, I mean, I guess it's worth the shot, right? Nate Oates thought it was worth it, right, this year.
Yes.
Obviously, Will Wade thinks it's worth it at LSU. Like, I mean, and look, we can spin this into almost the Brendan Sorsby situation. Texas Tech a year ago was anti-allowing college athletes to bet on other sports. And now they're going to defend their quarterback because they want him to play football for them.
Speaking of, Brendan Sorsby. Okay, so... along those lines, what did you make of, did it not feel like yesterday when we get the releases, did that not feel like the nuclear option to you?
To me, by Texas Tech?
Yes. Now, we were also talking through it. Like, in fairness, they could have been negotiating behind the scenes and realized it was not going to go a certain way. We just were not aware of those developments. And so, therefore, they chose to do this. I, however, go back to what I mentioned to you. I don't remember if it was last week or the week before. I paid attention when the Ohio and Kentucky gambling commissions, whatever their acronym is, when they opened up the investigation and Jeffrey Kessler, his attorney, was reached for comment. This is a man that has never been afraid of a microphone. All of a sudden, he had no comment. That led me to believe they got caught on their heels, and that, to me, seems why they expedited this, knowing, hey, we're going to try to get this injunction. If we can't, we're doing it early enough to where he can go into the supplemental draft, and then that same legal team will probably then sue Brendan Sorsby for breach of contract.
I love Sorsby's defense. It's so good. Quote, during this time, as we talk about 2022 when he was redshirting in Indiana, during this time I began placing small bets on the Indiana football team. Typically, it amounts between $50 to $50. All of these bets were in support of Indiana. In other words, I placed bets on Indiana to win a game or score more than a certain number of points, or for a quarterback to throw for more than a certain number of touchdowns or yards. He also stated, quote, I rationalized placing those bets as a way to feel more connected to the team, to root for my friends and to feel that I had a, quote, real stake in the game that I otherwise was not involved in. According to, I think, well, there's like 300 pages of this stuff, but On3 pulled this quote, because the Indiana football team was not a very strong competitor in 2022, I lost most of the bets I placed.
So this was the, this
like,
was,
what are we doing? Like, this is,
well, he, I mean, he's, he is trying to use the Pete Rose defense, which is, I only bet on us to win.
Right.
I only bet, like, he is trying to do that. But the problem that George and I were talking about is, yes, we've already seen the, for those that are out there, it's going around on Twitter, the,
what else he bet on?
No, well, forget all that. Like, he'd bet on stuff. I was like, where did you even find those lines?
Was it like Romanian soccer?
Yeah, I was like, even I, in my worst days, have never sought out that line. But we have Ryan Atulo has said, here's Judge Philip Hayes. He will decide if Texas Tech QB Brandon Sorsby gets to play this fall, and he's sitting with the Texas Tech mascot giving guns up. He is, of course, a multi-alumni of the university, or of Texas Tech University. I would still say all of this, though. Tennessee thought they got a friendly judge with Joey Aguilar. Alabama thought they got a friendly judge. They did technically get a friendly judge with Charles Bediako. They did originally get an injunction, and then it got brought to another court, and they had a judge recuse himself. I just kind of think, like, in lines, like, this to me reeks of desperation because he still has to answer the one question. And I think as much as people hate the NCAA, I don't think anyone reasonably out or any reasonable person out there believes, like, hey, man, you should be able to bet on the on your team.
It's pretty clear. Like, he bet on Indiana football when he was a member of the Indiana football team. And their rules are what they are. Like, I'm sorry.
And I don't think anyone would argue that it's not right for the NCAA to place rules on gambling to protect their product. I think most reasonable people would go, well, if you're running a competition, you need the competition to be considered fair.
Who was Calvin Ridley, right?
Yes.
He was the one who I laughed because he got suspended for a year. And they were like, well, inside information. I'm like, yeah, he put like the Falcons in like 9-leg parlays.
Yeah, he had like seven team money line parlays.
Like, there's no inside, there's not enough inside information to hit a 7-leg parlay.
It looked like he just took a bunch of favorites to win on a Sunday.
Right, like, which basically everyone tends to do. Going back to the judge, now you could take this for what you will, but I think Ari Wasserman did make a good point. He's like, just because a judge has a degree from a school doesn't mean he wants to jeopardize his professional resume to help that school be good at football. Now, you could say, maybe, but I think there is. Like, I would
so
imagine-
this is where I'll say I'm speaking from a lack of knowledge. Is he an elected judge?
I don't know.
Yeah, like, I don't know. The only thing you could talk me into is, like, for the sake of his political career, it would be advantageous for him to say guns up.
But I just don't know the grounds to allow him to play. Like, to your point of asking, was this the nuclear option? In classic lawyer ways, they're trying to make the NCAA look like the bad guy. Quote, the NCAA has weaponized his condition to shore up a facade of competitive integrity while simultaneously profiting from the very gambling ecosystem it polices. I mean, that's a lot of lawyer mumbo jumbo basically saying, well, yeah, well, the NCAA profits from gambling. Do they?
No, that's what George and I were talking about yesterday.
I don't think they do.
The NFL has.
Yes, they do.
They
NBA.
Take money. Oh, they take
NBA.
Money.
The NHL.
The NCAA, I have not seen an example that says FanDuel is their official sports broker. Different
institutions have partnered up at some point or another. I don't know if they, like, I remember Colorado partnered up with PointsBet, rest in peace. I don't think the NCAA has. Like, I don't recall, like, if you watch an NHL game, an NBA game, an NFL game, a Major League Baseball game, they've all partnered up with the DraftKings, the FanDuels, etc. I don't think the NCAA has. I could be wrong.
So George found an example of the NCAA working essentially with a third-party company.
It was essentially data broking.
So I don't – no one has clearly shown to me where the NCAA took money from the gambling companies. And listen, this is where you feel like you're the crazy person when you're sitting there going like, I think I got to speak up for the NCAA here. Like, someone's got to show me where they are really being hypocritical.
And even if they did take the money, which I don't think they did, in the NBA, players can't bet on the NBA. In the NFL, play. And guess what? You can no longer go to the tried and true, well, they're not getting paid. Well, no, now they are. Right? So this isn't a situation.
I think the only argument you could say the difference there is that the NBA, the NFL, Major League Baseball, the NHL, they all operate with a collectively bargained agreement. And you could say, well, the NCAA took money without it being collectively bargained, and therefore it's predatory. But I have seen no signs that show me where the NCAA did that.
And look, at the end of the day, like I was very understanding, you know, before there was NIL, you know, it was asinine to me that you couldn't profit from going to a car dealership and signing autographs. I'm like, that you've earned that right. So I was all in on NIL, and now there is NIL, and it's gone a little bit further where they're truly being paid by the university. Good, fine. That's what we've been fighting for a long time. There are rules, man. Like, there's rules in life. Like, it's sometimes you don't like the rules. Like, when VSiN was owned by DraftKings, I could not bet at DraftKings. There might have been times where DraftKings had better lines, better options. I could have lost my job if I bet at DraftKings. Is that fair? Those were the rules I was told as an employee of that company.
So Andy Staples, in his latest column, he simplified it as such. To be granted an injunction, Sorsby must show that he'll suffer irreparable harm if the injunction isn't granted to allow him to play this season for Texas Tech. His attorneys will argue he would suffer irreparable damage because of these factors. Number one, this is his final year of NCAA eligibility. Number two, Texas Tech has pledged to pay him millions of dollars for this season. Three, he possibly could increase his NFL draft stock with a good season, thus making him even more money. I'm finding myself like going right back to your point.
Tough bleep.
All of that was true. Yet there are rules.
You made the decision, and it's a mistake. We're not sending you to prison. You can't play in the sport that you bet illegally on. The rule states pretty clearly, if you wanted to bet on horse racing as a college athlete legally, you're fine. Like, it's pretty clear that you and he violated the main rule, which is he bet on his team. And I don't care if it's for $5 or $10. Like, the rules are the rules. And, yeah, once again, the NCAA, which I love to smack the NCAA, any really opportunity I can get, but, like, it's pretty clear, cut and dry. And maybe they went the nuclear route, Jeffrey, because they knew they had a hard and fast deadline of June 22nd, which is the deadline you need, which is the NFL supplemental draft deadline. Like, let's just go all in, push our chips in. Maybe we'll get, you know, the outcrying, the public support. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, and granted, I'm not, like, locked in on Lubbock Talk Radio or what's happening down there in Texas. I haven't really heard the defenses for Brendan Sorsby. Like, there have been plenty of times where players have eligibility questions, and like a lot of notable college names will come out and be like, this is ridiculous, NCAA, figure this out. He, you know, he or she dealt with X in her personal life and they just want to play the sport again. I have not seen many people come to the defense of Brendan Sores being like, let him play, unless you are, you know, guns up to the max. And even some Texas Tech people I know are like, yeah, this ain't happening. Like, he ain't playing.
I really don't, because, like, think about it. Like, you and I are probably going to be as sympathetic to people that gamble as anyone.
Sure.
I feel like you and I are pretty clear. Like, he bet on, like, no, you can't do it. You forfeited your eligibility.
Like, we've all done things, I'm sure, in our lives that probably weren't totally legal. But there's a risk when you do that. And he had to know when he clicked bet in 2022, he probably thought, no one's going to find this out. And to be honest, if he goes pro, here's the thing. If he goes pro this year instead of transferring to Texas Tech, do we ever find this out?
That's an interesting question, because
he got to play high-level football at Cincinnati, and nobody knew about this until now.
That's an interesting question, because, number one, it begs the first question, who was the source of the original information? Because it should be noted, the gambling commissions got involved after, not during.
Well, and here's an interesting nugget to the On3 article. Sources familiar with the situation told On3 that the Cincinnati Athletic Department was aware of Sorsby's gambling before the summer of 2025, but the athletic department would not knowingly play an athlete who violated NCAA rules. Cincinnati Athletics declined to comment on On3. So I don't know if it's someone from Cincinnati. That's my hunch, but that's speculatory.
My hunch is it came from Cincinnati, and my hunch is it came, I think in the end, this is my theory of how this all played out. Sorsby said, I'm leaving. They're offering me $6 million.
And thus breaking his contract with Cincinnati.
And essentially Cincinnati said, cool, pay us the $1 million back. And he basically either said over my dead body, or I don't think that's admissible. Like, I don't think that's going to hold up. And my theory is that Cincinnati held the information as a last resort to try to get him to pay up. He called their bluff thinking there's no way, because in the end it kind of incriminates them too.
Well, that's my second question.
Well, the first question is, why do you leave Indiana? Now, I guess you could make the argument he left Indiana because other guys came in.
Well, and he was pre-Signetti. So
are we sure Indiana didn't know?
Well, that's the thing. Does this get back to Indiana? Right? Is there a chance that this gets really ugly and Indiana's in trouble because a student athlete of theirs was betting on Indiana?
You could talk me into...
Now, they could just play ignorant.
Right, they could say we weren't alerted. Cincinnati found out in 2025, but we didn't know. I think it's possible.
And is it possible that Sorsby and his team go... Let's say the likely option happens. Sorsby does not play this year, enters the supplemental draft. Does Sorsby and his team say, all right, you want to play dirty? Let's play dirty. And does Cincinnati get in a whole lot of trouble if they were, according to On3, aware of his gambling? Now, it didn't say they were aware of what he did at Indiana, but according to the report, was that they were aware of his gambling. And according to NCAA rules, athletes are allowed to bet on UFC, MMA, horse racing, NASCAR, things that are not sanctioned by the NCAA, but you can't bet on baseball, basketball, football.
But all, maybe they could claim all we knew about was the gambling during that period of time when they did say that you could bet on pro sports.
That was like a month. It was a, I don't even know if that came into, it got approved, and then I think it even before it got approved, it got wiped away.
I could see where there's some wiggle room in there, but the problem is...
Now, Cincinnati also could just be like, we didn't know. Nah, we didn't know.
I guess the other question is what if Cincinnati, like, is this Cincinnati's way of being like, fine, Scott Satterfield, you're fired with cause?
Ooh, I like that angle. Yeah.
Because, like, but, in the end, everybody's just playing for leverage. Like,
well, yeah, and in the end, everyone's trying to fire their coach with cause.
Correct.
Remember when LSU tried to fire Brian Kelly with cause? He was like, what? No.
Well, my favorite was they tried to fire him for cause after they tried to negotiate a buyout. And then when he wouldn't, then they said they fired him for cause. I mean, I will say this. One of the biggest ironies, according to Texas Tech, the reason that they went after Sorsby was for they believed in his integrity. Not that I think gambling is like, I don't even really think like it's an immoral thing. I would also argue, though, misrepresenting yourself might be.
How does this end?
I think he's done.
I do, too. I think they went scorched earth. I think they put
this feels very desperate.
They went, they threw the Hail Mary. They're going all out because they know the date is coming up. And then it begs the question of, are you able to get, like, what is Sorsby, what was he projected to be? Could he have been a first-round pick?
I don't think he would have been first. Most people said third. But back to your other question, like, originally, of would we find out? My gut says yes, because the NFL does more background checks than college does, because they have longer.
All right, here's a second question. What if he stayed at Cincinnati? Would we have found this out?
My inclination is no.
I second that big time.
All right, let's take a quick break. We come back. Let's talk some mock drafts. We got a new one from ESPN, and we got one from our guy, DeMichael Cole, over at the Commercial Appeal. Let's talk about it next, right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
I'm Mark Sullinger, producer and one of the hosts of The Moth Podcast. For nearly two decades, The Moth has brought live storytelling to stages around the world and to millions of listeners. These are real people telling true stories from their lives. Stories about a lost family recipe, about working to free a wrongfully convicted man, about realizing you need to leave your May-December romance. Stories that will move you, surprise you, make you laugh. Stories you can't forget. Join us. Follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, over at ESPN.com. We have Jeremy Wu's latest mock draft, and I guess really what I would say, the only interesting thought I had in the top five, so number one, the Wizards taking DeBonsa. Number two, Darren Peterson to the Jazz. Three, Cam Boozer to the Grizzlies. Four, Caleb Wilson to the Bulls. Five, Keaton Wagler to the Clippers. I feel like the first
he
four...
He seems to be the riser.
And I'm a little bit surprised by that, because if everyone is so obsessed with length right now and playing longer than you are, that is not what Wagler measured at. So he has him going to the Clippers at five. I also think that that's more a little bit positional, even though a lot of teams are looking at him as the lead ball guy. It seems like the pairing of him and Garland would be the thought. Then Acuff going at six to the Nets.
Such a perfect net.
Seven, Kingston Flemings to the Kings. Eight, Ade Mara to the Hawks. I can safely say, like, I talked to a couple people that were at the Combine. Everyone was talking about him moving up.
Well, look at last night. I'm not saying he's going to be Wemby, but, like, this league with long, versatile bigs like a Daimara. Yeah, I mean,
well, I'm also wondering,
I can see him moving up.
If Wimby's going to be this guy, are you going to have a true monster in the middle again?
I mean, the problem is he can draw you out. Like, if you're Sean Bradley or something like that, like, he's just going to draw you out.
And I guess, is everyone just going to start playing him? Like, if he's going to be out there, let one of your perimeter defenders, like, is everyone going to try to do some version of what the Thunder did, which was essentially, yeah, you start with a smaller defender on him out in front, but you leave your big guy to try and protect the rim.
And what's so unique about last night's game, going back to it real quickly, is that when Shea tied the game up, they pulled Chet and put him out, right? Like, you need a big now that makes you respect their shooting or have him on the bench. I think Chet was in.
No, Chet. So George and I were talking about this very play, because for much of the game, if you remember, Lou Dort, who's kind of been their corner three machine guy, when he struggled, essentially Wembanyama would just leave him and then go protect the rim. It did seem like he was legitimately concerned if SGA kicked it to him for the wide open corner three. Now, granted, game situation also matters. Like,
right,
when he
they could not have lost with a layup last night.
Correct.
They could have lost with a three.
And also earlier in the game, maybe he's a little bit more aggressive and can come off of Lou Dort, because if you give up a three, there's still enough time to make it up. But in that exact set of circumstances, you cannot give up the three and lose.
And they had a good look at a three at the end of overtime one, right? Wasn't it Jalen Williams missed a free throw line extended three? But my point was, do you also have to have a big that can shoot a little bit so you don't just have...
I think we're now at the point in the NBA, every single person on the floor has to be some form of a three-point threat.
Yeah.
I mean, even Edie, a guy that we consider like traditional back-to-the-basket big, he's still pulling out and shooting threes when open.
I mean, Mara this year at Michigan shot a little bit. He went 3 for 10. So he doesn't really stretch it. But, look at Luka Garza, for example. I know he's not anywhere near the same level as a Chet or Victor, but he's completely changed his game. He's more of a stretch guy now. And when in college, he was just straight up back to the basket, old school big. Now, that might have been out of desperation. Like, hey, man, if you want to be in the league, you better learn how to shoot some threes. But, yeah, I mean, I could see Mara. I think he's skilled enough to become a better shooter. So, yeah, I agree. I think you could see him rise a little bit in this draft.
I think what would be the big question is, when do you think the first team makes a trade? Because it seems at this point, the only way we're getting a trade in the top four is if, I mean, to me, it seems like if the Wizards are willing to trade.
Right. If Utah makes the Wizards the Godfather offer, and do they, and we don't know, but like, do they have Peterson and DeBanza? Could they pull a Sixers? A Celtics deal, right, from a couple years ago, when the Celtics knew they wanted Tatum, but knew no one was going to draft him. One, that was the draft, right? They traded back with Philly, right?
Yep.
So, like, Washington, every mock has them picking DeBanza. I assume they'll do that, but like, what if they have Peterson as a higher rated prospect, and they know that Utah clearly wants DeBanza? What can they get out of that?
It feels to me right now, Utah knows that everybody knows they want DeBanza, but they're going to also have a serious question, which is the gap between DeBanza and Peterson wide enough for you to give up whatever it would cost?
Right.
Because we also had...
How much did they give up to Memphis for Triple J? So what are their
two firsts,
right?
I think.
Now, they had been stockpiling picks for a long time. They were the, hey, dump your crappy contracts with us
team
for a couple of years. So I'm sure they have the war chest, if you want to say that.
Well, it's also like, are they going to be willing to give up Ace Bailey?
Well, that was a question. I saw someone put that out there on social media yesterday, like Ace Bailey and a future first for the number one. I mean, once again, I don't know how the Wizards have them rated, but like, if that's the offer, I think you'd have to really think long and hard about it, unless you think AJ DeBanza is a clearly generational type of talent. And there's like, I don't know. I don't think there is any trade that the San Antonio Spurs would have listened to for Victor Wembanyama, nor should they have, right?
Yeah, that seems fair.
But you think back to, was it 2019? The Zion draft? And the same was being said then, and in hindsight, maybe they should have thought about it if there were offers coming in for Zion, right?
Like, yeah, and I mean, and I guess where you could say here's where the similarities are. Like, I still contend, like, the basketball side of Zion was never a question for me. It was like, the guy can play. But if your concerns were injury and health, well, then that's something that we can talk about.
I have no idea. It probably is just pure speculation fodder. But if I'm the Washington Wizards and the Utah Jazz are so desperate to get this guy, and I trust in our scouting, and they're willing to offer a guy like Ace Bailey, or I don't know if they would trade someone like Keontae George, but let's say they offer someone really good, and you're getting it still Darren Peterson, who, let's rewind 3 months ago when he was like minus 400 to be the number one pick. I have no idea if this is legitimately being discussed, but if it were, if I'm Washington, I'm absolutely listening, because you still could land a Darren Peterson who could be better than AJ DeBanza.
Well, I also think that there's this question. Does anyone in DC think that the Wizards are keeping Anthony Davis?
I haven't checked in a little bit. I would be surprised. I mean, there are some people who are like, well, look at this lineup. We've got, AD and Trae Young. We're going to go for it. I'm like, dude, AD ain't playing for the Wizards. Trae Young might. I think Trae Young actually wants to be in Washington. And apparently, wasn't it the report, didn't Ace Bailey want to be in Washington last year?
He did, but I also think that was a money thing.
Okay.
He was going to be able to get to the bigger contract faster, and they were going to have, because, you know, Bailey's running into the issue that, like, all those guys are not going to be able to get paid in Utah, and they're all roughly on the same timeline.
Right.
But, like, yeah, that's my other question, though, is, like, all right, if you know you're getting rid of AD, I'm not even saying this because he's mocked to go to the Grizzlies. I'm still not convinced that there's not a lot of teams out there that don't think that Cam Boozer's the best player in the draft. And if you're the Wizards and you're trading Anthony Davis, doesn't that all of a sudden, and let's say you get an Ace Bailey, well, would you rather have Ace Bailey and Darren Peterson or an Ace Bailey and a Cam Boozer?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'd rather have, I mean, do Peterson and Trae Young work together? But, like, are you really concerned? You basically got Trae Young for free, so, like, does that really hinder your decision here? I still think AJ goes one. I think the Wizards stick and pick, but, I mean, if you can make a big trade and get a two players for one, and that one player could, in theory, be better than the guy going one, I don't know, man. I think you think about it.
My gut says the first four go chalky.
So, I think
Utah knows that everybody knows that they'd probably prefer DeBanza, but I also think that they're probably not going to just spend everything. And so I think what ends up happening is The Wizards are going to take DeBonta 1. The Jazz will take Peterson 2. The Grizzlies will take Boozer 3. And then the Bulls will take Wilson 4.
Yeah, Wilson.
Then it starts to get interesting for me. Because I think the Clippers would like to probably sell the pick if the offer's high enough. And then who wants to move up to 5? Because I think if you're moving up at that point, you're moving up to get one of the guards.
I think if you're moving up to 5, yeah, you're probably trying to get either Acuff or...
I think you're likely, if you're moving up to 5, I think you're trying to get Acuff.
That would be my guess.
Sorry, the question you were going
to
ask.
Oh, so I wanted to circle back to where we are in Memphis on 3. Is it becoming more solid that it's going to be Cam Boozer? Because I think the last time we talked, maybe 2 weeks ago, it was like, could the Caleb Wilson rise end up supplanting Cam Boozer? Or is that quieted down? Does it seem more likely that if it's Boozer versus Wilson, assuming AJ and Peterson go 1-2 in some order, that Memphis just goes with Boozer?
So the way that I would say it is, I think it's still early because nobody's done the workouts. But I also think it's important to note this. Everyone that even covers the team thinks that Boozer's the pick.
Okay. I would be... fair to say you'd be stunned if Memphis moved off this pick?
Stunned, yes.
Yeah, I agree.
I think they would like... I think the question will be... I think they're unlikely to pick at 16. The question for me is how high can they get up? Because I'm of a certain mind that I know like everyone's going to have their did you win the deal, but I kind of look at it that not all drafts are the same. And if you have this situation where you could finish the Wednesday, you know, the Tuesday night of the draft and you added Cam Boozer and Darius Acuff, like I think you're one of the most exciting young teams in the NBA. I'm not saying like, oh, you're winning next year, but I do think everyone's sitting there going like, well, let's see how this goes. You know, take your whoever else you want to add to the this four of Acuff, Cedric Coward, Zach Edey, Cam Boozer. If you want it to be Jalen Wells, if you want it to be someone else, like that's a pretty interesting four players.
It felt like when we talked last, it was more of, hey, Cameron Boozer's the safe pick, but Caleb Wilson, upside galore. I think once the dust settles, it seems like it's starting to settle. It's like, or you can just go with a guy who's, you know, 6'8", 6'9", average 22-10, and, you know, I talked to one ACC assistant coach. Like, I don't have all the sources in the world. And his quote to me was that,
from the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.